I think crossing North Africa must have taken us what?
Well, let's tell you, we were in Africa at least 10 months.
Well, yeah, but wait a minute. North Africa, there's a difference.
Oh, North Africa, yeah.
That's the second part of the
trip. Well, we went from... The other thing you have to know is that we always, whenever possible, we slept out.
Yeah, we didn't
sleep
in
cities or hotels or anything like that. We tried to always carry some bananas and any kind of bread, herbs, whatever they were making in that country. So we went from Morocco to Tunisia to Algeria, and then Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, and then we couldn't get into Libya because we were Americans. So we took a boat up to, from Tunis to, what's the island in the bottom of, Sicily, to Sicily. And from Sicily we went to Greece, to Corfu, and then we were able to get back down to Egypt.
So I don't know how long that trip took. Probably 6 months.
Across North Africa, probably good.
And I think 5 months, during that time, like that, after we left Morocco, I would say we met 5 travelers, maybe.
Yeah.
During those 6 months. So then, when we got to Egypt, the idea was to go down the Nile.
So we did that.
We did that to Sudan, and then Sudan into Uganda, and then I was telling you that when we got.
Hold on. We have some nice details here. We went from Aswan in the south of Egypt on a barge down the Nile from Aswan to Wadi Haifa, to the camel herders. Yeah, the traders. They come up from Sudan with their camels to sell in southern Egypt. And they sell them and then they take the barge back down. So on this trip, it was good that I had a jalaba with me because I had to go as a man because the women were in the bottom, like in the hole, you know. And then, so I wanted to travel as a man. So I did, you know, I covered myself. And then, you know, a lot of people put up a hood, so I did that. And then there's no way I was going to underneath. So then when we got off the boat in Sudan, in Wadi Haifa, it's met by a train. And that train
we hit a sandstorm. I had the mask on.
And you got in the train. I mean, there was nobody. The train was for people coming off this boat, and I guess some other people. All the windows didn't have windows that closed or anything like that, or even doors. I don't think they closed. And yeah, there was no food on it or anything like that. And it was just like everyone was like dust. They were all like white.
It looked like everyone was like the living dead or
something. Yeah, like ghosts, like a train of ghosts, white ghosts.
They liked the mask. They thought the mask was really...
And now they wear masks in Mauritania. Now, more recently, in the Sahel,
they wear masks.
Turbans.
At a time, they had never seen
a mask. They goggle masks they wear.
Where did you go with this train?
Oh, with the train, we went to Khartoum, the capital of Sudan.
Uh-huh.
Mm. Hung out in Khartoum.
Well, there's a story there, too, but... So we had that guy, and we were on the roof. He took us in, the doctor.
That was very interesting. Yeah. So... Yeah, in Khartoum, the only foreigners they had met were Russians because some of their people were being sent to Russia, like doctors to train. And he was so surprised to see us, and he was a Russian-trained doctor. And he said, come stay with me for a while. You can live on the roof. So we lived on the roof and got to hang out in Khartoum for a while. And then he said, well, what are you going to do? And we said, we're crossing the desert to go to Uganda. And he said, is there a road or how do you do it? And he said, well, there's a road, but it ends in 10 kilometers and it's a desert. You'd have to wait at the end of the road and find somebody going in that direction. Just wait, and if you're lucky. So we were lucky and we got across the desert into Uganda. And then
What happened in Uganda?
Well, first thing was it was very psychedelic because we hadn't seen green, right, in many months, only the desert. So seeing something even as lush as this, I mean, it was almost too much for your eyes. I mean, you took a couple of days to get used to being in a jungle. And the people were great. We had a good time and we loved it. We traveled by foot. We walked right through these areas of Games Park that are now Games Parks. You know, people with guns and wild animals. We just walked through them for weeks.
You're not supposed
weeks.
To go into Games Parks unless you're on like a tour. Now, right. Remember, this is 1971. But we just had backpacks.
Just walked, right?
And we just walked right through and then we slept out in the Games Park. But, you know, they have like some... Now they're all built up, but at the time they had like some campsites and things like that. I guess they still have those. And so we could...
I wouldn't call it a campsite.
No, yeah. not a campsite the way we think about it, but a place where you could stay nearby was water. Right?
But we would see incredible animals. We're just walking every day. We see all the animals you can imagine. So
giraffes, beautiful animals.
Anything. I mean...
Like herds of giraffes.
Yeah. But no trouble, and occasionally we'd meet a traveler, usually in a van or something. We got to...
We were always hitchhiking.
Yeah,
we hitchhiked
whenever we could.
And then we went to Kenya.
Well, no, we stopped off and hung out with...
Oh, yeah, with the pygmies.
With the pygmies, yeah, that was interesting.
Mm.
Yeah, but we liked Uganda, wanted to stay. Oh, we had interesting experiences, including hanging out with pygmies, who were interesting people. Fearless during the day, at night, they're inside. They do not deal with night creatures well. And we were going to stay, and then Idi Amin became president, and we started hearing these rumors of atrocities and rivers with bodies turning red with bodies floating down it. And at first we thought it was rumors, and then we realized it wasn't rumor, and then people said, you're foreign, you could be a target, you have to get out of the country. So, and you can't get out of the country through the normal border because that could be too dangerous. So you have to go through the mountains to get to Kenya. So we took the more difficult route and got into Kenya, and hung out in Kenya for a few months, and
we spent time there on the coast in a beautiful island called Lamu, which is north of Mombasa.
Yeah, it became a kind of a famous hangout, and then recently it's been the site of many kidnappings.
Mm-hmm. They built it up to a tourist place, but at the time there was nothing there.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful.
So we hung out in those islands, and not just those islands, through different parts of Kenya.
Yeah.
And then we decided... money was running low. We decided that we would go down to South Africa. So we went to Tanzania first, liked Tanzania, made friends with the photographer of President Nyerere, who took us around and introduced us to people and showed us what was going on. The Chinese were building a road, all kinds of amazing development projects, crazy development projects were going on.
The Makandis.
What's that?
Remember, we went...
We have to tell them the Tusker.
No, I was just talking about the Makandis, the statues.
Yeah, no, but the...
Okay.
No, the Tusker. This is a great story. It's one of my favorite stories. I forgot all about this. So we're on the road in the middle of...
Tanzania.
Yeah, we're in near
Arusha.
Moshi.
Arusha.
Yeah, Arusha.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And...
At the near Mount Kilimanjaro. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and we're trying to get to the coast, and we're there for a long time, and there's no vehicles, nothing. It's very hot. Mm. And all of a sudden, this Peugeot, a new Peugeot, comes screaming down the road, maybe 80 miles an hour, zooms past us. We can't even stick out a thumb, and screeches to a halt. And turns around, and we think, okay, it's probably some nut case. You know, we've run into our fair share of unusual people. And he looks at us and he says, I would very much appreciate you accompanying me to my beer factory. He said, we are producing our first bottle of Tusker beer in this factory. And he was an Indian. And he said, you know, I'm a Hindu, and I am an engineer, and I don't drink, but I'm a food engineer. I designed the factory, and we're producing our first bottle today. We're having a ceremony, And he said, I have no idea if this beer is any good, and I can't trust the Africans, he said, because they'll tell me anything is good. He said, so you're European, you must drink beer, right? And I said, well, sure, we drink beer. He said, I'll tell you what, if you come to the factory and have the first bottle of beer, I will drive you to the coast in some hours, because I have to go there. I'll drive you there. So we thought, this is like some sort of fantasy. There's a dolphin. Yeah.
A what? Dolphin?
Over here. Right there, right there.
Oh.
Right there, maybe. You can photograph it if you... So we couldn't believe it. We thought, okay, this is something. It's got to be a scam, something weird. We get to the factory. Everyone stands at attention when this guy comes in. All the factory workers. He comes in and... the first bottle is presented to us in a chilled glass. You have to understand, it was like 95 degrees. We hadn't bathed in 3 days. It was really hot. Mosquitoes. And he gave us each a glass of beer. Everyone waited in silence. I drank it, and he said, is it good? I said, oh, this is great. And he said, would Europeans drink it? That was his question. If this beer was in Europe, would Europeans drink it, or would they spit it out? I said, they would definitely drink it. This big smile came on his face. He announced to everybody. We had learned some Swahili, and he announced to everyone that the beer was good, that it was a success, and everyone was happy and dancing, and it was this great experience. And then he was so happy that he dropped us off. Dropped us off at Dar es Salaam. We couldn't believe our good fortune. So then we were in Dar es Salaam. We hung out with this photographer. The president liked having his photograph taken. So, yeah, so from then, we had to get through Zambia. And that was tough because there's a road there called Hell's Run. And people they chew this drug called Mara.
Cut.
Yeah. So if you've ever chewed it before, it makes you wired. I mean, it's like it just wires you. You're just like, and you're just, and being on a road with crazy truck drivers, there's accidents all the time. We had heard about this. And people said, yeah, you can do it, but be really careful. Make sure your driver's not chewing this stuff all the time, because he could be out of his skull. And they do not stop. You know, they start, and it's like a straight shot through the country. So we got a truck drivers through. Luckily, we made it. Then we get down to Rhodesia. Wanted to go to Malawi, but couldn't get in. Got into Rhodesia.
Well,
they wouldn't let us in Rhodesia because they had long hair.
Malawi. We didn't go to Malawi because we got into Rhodesia.
No, but I'm saying, we couldn't get through Rhodesia initially. We tried, and we looked too much like travelers, or whatever you want to call us, and had long hair, and they said no, they would not let us through. We'd be stuck. What the hell are we supposed to do?
Well, remember the first car that we had in Rhodesia, the first person who picked us up had like all these guns in the car, and that was the first time we'd gotten into these countries that were part white. And
we're fearful.
And we're very fearful of blacks that were, you know, really segregated. Yeah. And that was like, what is this? Because we've been in black Africa all this time. And now we were in this completely different sort of world. And then...
we had to change clothes. I met a Rhodesian and said, look, the only way you can get across the border is you have to buy a pair of khaki shorts, long stockings. You have to look exactly
socks,
like,
you know,
these
knee
people.
Socks.
And then,
like the great white trader.
Yeah, and then you've got to be in
helmet.
A car.
But we didn't have a helmet.
You've got to wait and find someone who will let you be in their car and just go in with them and present your passport. So we did that. You know, cut hair and wore these ridiculous, stupid shorts with stockings. I mean, just in the tropics. And we got in, and we got through that country pretty quickly.
We went to Victoria Falls.
Went to Victoria Falls.
Unbelievably gorgeous, beautiful place. And then we had to enter South Africa.
Yeah, and then that was interesting.
Well, And that time in South Africa, you couldn't leave unless you had enough money. Either you needed a ticket to your place of origin, which we didn't have a ticket home, or you needed to post the bond, the money, for how much that ticket might be. So,
or some ticket out of the country.
Or some, yes, yeah, some ticket, that's right, some ticket out of the country. So
that was all of our money.
That was all of our money. We had to post a ticket to the closest place, which happened to be Mozambique. So we got into, they didn't want to let us into South Africa because we were not desirables.
If to be desirable, you had to have work.
Yeah.
So I lied. I said, yeah, we're coming here to work. Because if you're white and you're not working, that's not acceptable. I mean, there is no one who is white that does not work. So I said, no. So we were in South Africa, traveled around for quite a while. Went down to Jeffreys Bay, did the whole surfing thing with no surfboard. Met some local surfers. It was good. And then we needed to make money, so first I tried being a guitar player. That didn't work because, I mean, I got a job in a place that didn't have a liquor license, people drinking coffee. You try to play music in a... Then I get a job at Shell Oil as a pipe fitter. I've never fit pipes in my life. I have an Aussie friend I met who said, I'll teach you how to do it in 2 days. And then they gave me a toolbox full of bricks. Right. They said, if you... show up at the job site, they will have a black guy carry your toolbox, and if it's heavy, they think you must know what you're doing, you have a lot of tools. So they filled it up full of stones. Go on the job site, and the guy sees that I'm American, figures that I'm an ex-soldier or mercenary or something, doesn't give me a job, but puts me in charge of 10 Zulus who are putting together pipes for their whole life. And as soon as I met them, they realized I had no idea what I was doing. And they said, look. And I said, look, I'm American. I'm not for apartheid. All the rest of this, I mean, we were different. They wanted to know about America. Hold on a second, buddy.
Yeah.
And they said, we'll teach you how to do this, but you have to curse at us. Every time one of the South Africans come by, you have to call us lazy fucking sloggers. And, you know, they told me the curse words. You have to yell at us, you know, say you're going to beat us and treat us really badly. And then the rest of the time, they work really fast. And then they sit in these pipes, they play cards and drink Coca-Cola. And this worked for a while until they came up to the site and they said to me, be very careful with this one pipe. We don't want you to cut it. We want you to join it. And it's the only one we have. And it's very expensive, like a couple $1,000. And I said, I can't do it. They said, what do you mean you can't do it? I said, no, it's your only pipe. You should get someone more experienced. They're like, either get the pipe, get off the job site. I said, I'll leave. I figured if they found out I didn't know what I was doing and I just tried, they'd shoot me. So the Zulu guys were furious. They said, it's easy. Cut it. Joining pipes, we would have done it in 2 hours. Why did you do that? But we lost the job, but we had made some money.
I worked as a waitress. I lost that job because I really couldn't understand the South African accent very well because we were new to South Africa. And bring people the wrong food.
And they kicked you off.
Yeah, they fired me. They didn't bring people the right things.
But the story gets...
But there's something more important, I think. The first day, once we got into South Africa, that you went a little further ahead, but when we got into South Africa, the first people who picked us up, we walked from the border. We just, you know, started walking away from there into the country, and we were picked up by Indians, South African Indians, who are, at that time, they were... second-class citizens. They were Indians are considered second-class citizens. So they took us. It was nightfall by the time we got somewhere with them, and we're going to a camping site, and they kind of gave us this sort of education in apartheid. We didn't understand the hierarchy of beings that were in South Africa and how, you know, we didn't know that much about it. And they told us how this really beautiful campsite that they had, you know, right at the ocean, but they couldn't swim because the places, you know, there's a lot of sharks in South Africa. Yeah, Zambezi sharks. But the places that they've given to the second class and third class citizens in South Africa, they don't have nets there. So people don't swim in them. You can go and camp, whatever, but you can't swim. And then they said, in the morning at first dawn, you know, first light, you have to, we're going to wake you, and you have to start walking, because when it becomes really light here, no one can see that you stayed here with us. Otherwise, you'll immediately go to jail, and we'll go to jail, because we couldn't mix in that way.
So
that was our sort of first education.
Apartheid was, one of the reasons for going to South Africa, other than surfing and making money, was to see apartheid. Because, you know, we had participated in civil rights protests and stuff in the States, and I had heard about apartheid, but, you know, hearing about it and seeing it are entirely different. So that was a reason. Now, we eventually, we got kicked out of the country and accused of being journalists because we kept journals. That's what journals, right? So although we didn't have a lot of stuff that we carried around our journals until we could send them home, right? Thank God, at least my handwriting is really bad, because they were political statements about how fucked up apartheid was. But they kicked us out of the country, and they said, and I visited, an uncle was working in Lesotho for UNESCO. So they had a huge file on us. They knew that we had been fraternizing with Zulus and with Indians.
Oh, Swaziland, which is also a mixed kind of place.
They said, you know, you go to jail or you get kicked out of the country. So we were kicked out as undesirables. But here's where the story gets interesting, because when we were told to kick out of the thing, we had posted all our money, bond, right? And they said, we're not giving you back your money unless you can pick it up at any South African embassy in another country.
So we're not giving it to you. They would just give it to us. You'd give us our money when we exited. But that wasn't the case. They said, we're going to send that money. You can pick it up at any South African embassy. The only South African embassy
was in
Lorenzo Mark, Mozambique.
And there was a war in Mozambique. So
that was the only embassy. We had to go there to get our money.
So we had to travel through Swaziland, get into Mozambique. Then we get to Mozambique, and they want to give it to us in escudos, which is local currency, which is absolutely useless. What are we going to do with escudos? Buy avocados? I mean, there's no way out of the country. Where are you going to go? So we went to the American embassy the first time in our life, and we thought we would complain. We gave them dollars. They should give us back dollars. We had given them like $300 each. So that was a lot of money. It was a lot of money. And the person who became the consulate, it's a very good story, was the first woman consulate in that country. I don't know if it was all of Africa. I think it was just in that country.
I forgot about her.
Yeah. She looked exactly like Doris Day. She looked like the kind of woman in an American soap opera. Like, completely scrubbed clean, you know. How would you describe a woman like
straight.
This?
Straight. Very straight.
Beyond straight. Super straight. You know. And she said, well, this is an outrage. You're an American citizen. If you gave them dollars, they should give you dollars back. So she gets on the phone, and she calls up the South African embassy, and her face turns this color of your pen, bright red. And we hear her saying, I am the consulate. I am not the secretary of the consulate. You are speaking to the consulate. And they hung up on her. They wouldn't believe that a woman could possibly hold that kind of a position. And she looked at me and she said, I can't believe it. They are completely disrespectful. I will take your escudos and give you dollars. So anyway, to make a long story short, the only way out for us was to take a tramp steamer up the coast to back up to East Africa. Luckily, we had spoken some Swahili, and people, because usually if you have a South African stamp on your your passport at the time. No one would take you in. And we explained, no, prison, kicked out. And they had put on it, you know, undesirable, kicked out of the country. And the Africans, East Africans like that, was like, oh, they kicked you out. Okay, you must be okay. But you can only stay here a few weeks. So we got on a tramp steamer to India. It cost, I still remember the Karanja, it cost $35 deck passage to India, which was about 12 or 14 days.
It wasn't that we wanted to go to India.
We
didn't want to go to India. We liked Africa. But it was the only way out for us, out of Africa, because we couldn't travel in any countries anymore because we had South Africa on the passport. And we couldn't fly anywhere because we didn't have enough money. We couldn't get a job. It didn't hardly let us back into Kenya. And then we just had to take the boat.